All right, welcome. How's everybody doing today? Good. So we're going to talk about mobile development. How many of you have taken a certification exam before? Okay, so for you guys, the first part might be a little boring. But the second part, we're going to delve into a lot of detail. Well, as much detail as I can. So the first rule of the first thing on my list up there is my beard. So I should tell you, everybody asks me about my beard, and the answer is because I can grow it. Okay? That's the answer. Thought I'd throw that out, get that out of the way bright and early here. The next thing on my list, reasons for developers to get certified. And there's a hiring manager here, so I won't make jokes. But here's what I will tell you. I'm going to tell you a little story of why you might want, two reasons why you might want to get certified. So the first one, in 2005, I was looking for work. And I'm looking through the ads on the internet, and I'm going, okay, I'm .NET, so I look for the .NET jobs. And .NET, by the way, released in 2002. And this is 2005. And I'm looking at the job ads, and they all say, we want 5 years experience. And I'm going, how can you have 5 years experience in .NET when it was released 3 years ago? Unless the only people you want to apply for the job are the people who were on the product team with Anders in 1997 actually writing the original stuff. So point here is that the people who write the ads, the first people you see when you go to find a job, the hiring people, those people are usually HR, and they don't know a whole lot about any how you code, any development type stuff at all. So by getting certified, you can prove that you have tangible proof, and that gets you that can get you through the front door, get you through that first hiring person, so you can actually talk to somebody like him who knows something about code and can check you for that. The other reason is if you're just starting out in development, if you haven't developed before, this is a way for you to prove that you have some sort of a baseline of knowledge. In development, a lot of people want you to have experience. But how do you get experience? Well, you need to get your foot in the door somewhere so that you can get that experience. So certification is a way to get you in the door. It's a way to differentiate yourself. The third, yes. Just learning the test? Most of the developers I know fly by the seat of their pants. But to your point, as far as certification goes, you spend time in the tools. You spend time playing around and learning how things work rather than just learning the test. You study for a much broader range of things than you would in a job. I will tell you this, another short, brief story, and then we'll get to more important stuff. So I've changed jobs, go to a new company, and I forgot how to write data access code because I hadn't written it I wrote data access code before. I just wrote it early in the process, and we keep reusing that code. So I didn't remember how to do it. I had to look it up online. But the answer is it shows that you have a breadth of knowledge of the product, that you know more than just XAML, you know more than just developing for a mobile device. You have a broader knowledge of the topic. Also, if you're up against another developer who has the same experience that you do and you have certification, it's a differentiator, once again. So those are kind of my reasons for developers to get certified, because a lot of developers don't think they need to get certified because experience is more important with hiring managers. Experience is more important with hiring managers. For developers, it always has been, it always will be. After you part of learning for the test, you can go and create your own little mobile app so that you can see how this stuff works. Yeah, learning a test isn't going to teach you how to program a computer. What it's going to do is give you the tools, make sure you have those tools and that you have the breadth so you can go ahead and program something. All right, why developer exams are this way? So I get this every time I talk to developers about the exams, and I agree. The exams are very, I have to word this carefully because we're at a Microsoft conference and I'm doing a certification talk, can be very exacting. They'll give you multiple lines of code and they look good, and some of them are actually some, generally only one will be the right answer. But they can all look really good. It can be really hard to tell. And they're very close to each other. And part of what they're looking for, and I was just talking to somebody outside about this, part of what they're looking for is detail. You have to be very detail-oriented. And you have to be that way in programming anyways. But it can be really frustrating when you take an exam that, well, those all look right. I don't understand it. If you just go through the exam quickly, you will get questions wrong. Why? Because the stuff looks good. It's just not exactly right. And guess what? When you're in Visual Studio, it won't compile because it's not exactly right. The advantage you have in Visual Studio is you hit the dot key and it tells you all the possible options. Actually, developing can be easier than the exams. But that's why the exams are the way they are. The other part of it is, well, why couldn't I just write some code, and if it works, I should be able to pass the exam? And here's the answer to that. I believe, and I think most people that I know believe, that programming is an art, not a science. There are many ways to do the same thing. Just think about how many ways there are to open a file or get data out of a database. I could use ADO.NET, I could use Entity Framework, I could use this tool, I could use that tool. I can use get data, lots of different ways out of a database. Which one is best? Depends on your organization, your culture, what you're doing with the data. Entity Framework adds a layer of abstraction that sometimes is not acceptable as far as speed, as far as anything else. So why you do certain things a certain way? But so how do we test that? How do we say if you could use Entity Framework, you write ADO.NET, you could do it all these other ways? How can we come up with heuristics that look at the code and say yes, it will work, or no, it won't? How can we automate that process? Because let's face it, it's got to scale, right? There's a lot of people taking tests all over the world. It's got to scale. Different languages, it's got to scale. And it's got to be able to work in different languages. And the answer is, we aren't there yet. The heuristics aren't there yet. We're getting there, but we're not there yet. So Microsoft doesn't have that test. I don't know if they're working on it. We've discussed it. I've actually mentioned that to the product team, but I don't know if they're doing anything about it. They don't tell me these things. But that's why the tests are the way they are. Okay, there's only one right answer for each question. They can be rather persnickety in the way they phrase things, okay? Generally, there's gonna be an answer that's gonna be easy to throw away. There's gonna be a couple answers that might look right, but aren't. And if you're really familiar with the stuff, you'll be able to say, oh yeah, that's not right, that's not right, and pick the right one. But they are technical and they are very, I guess, persnickety is the best word I can use in a public forum at a conference. There are other words I could think of, but. Okay, so that's why exams are the way they are. The next one, CertGuard. So there's some rules about exam prep at Microsoft. First rule is don't talk about exam. No, wait, that's the exams itself. The rule of the exam itself is you can't talk about the exam. You can't talk about the individual items, so I will not be doing that because I'm not allowed. But also, you can't use brain dumps. Microsoft has a strict rule on that. So if you're interested, CertGuard will tell you which practice tests are considered brain dumps and which ones aren't. So go to CertGuard.com, making sure I just learned about that website this morning. And that website actually will tell you if it's considered a brain dump by Microsoft. And if you use those and they find out, they can take away your certification. So you want to do that. Now, how do you prepare for tests? Well, exam prep is good because I'm talking about some of this stuff right now. But the best way that I know of, for developer tests especially, is practice tests. Now, across the hall, we have a room where you can do all the measure up practice tests, and this test is one of them. In fact, I just was across the hall playing with a practice test. Now, that room has been full, or close to full, all day. So, the last one there, if I spelled it right, is the URL that they're using for the place across the hall, and it will work as long as you're on the internet inside the hall. The IP addresses that they're using for the wireless in here are acceptable. So you don't have to go to the study hall across the hall. You can actually do that from any place in the building. Go to that website, you'll get a web page, and you can use Measure Up for free. The only ones we have are Measure Up. They are free until Friday. At some point on Friday, after like 1 o'clock, they will take down that website and you won't be able to access them. Yes, sir?
I'm just wondering if you remember what their username and password
is. It's on that page. If you go to that web page, it'll tell you what the username and password is. So, yes, it will tell you. The last thing is it may or may not work off-site. I don't know. But I know that the wireless on-site, it works all over the place. So I was using wireless in the room, and I was able to take the practice exam fine. I didn't want to take away a chance for one of you guys to try the practice tests. But that's the best way. Practice tests will tell you what you got right, what you got wrong, each individual question, and why you got it wrong. And there will be links to tell you why you got it wrong. So if you want to look up more information about that particular topic, you certainly can. To speed up that process, I will often go into the Measure Up tests and say, I would like all the stuff that I would like to take questions on the topics that I don't know well. That's what I usually do. I'll usually go in there and say, I'd like to take the tests on the topics that I am unfamiliar or don't feel really comfortable with. The stuff I think I know, I can skip. Hopefully by the end of this session, I will have helped you with maybe 3 or 4 answers, and that's often the difference between passing the test and not passing the test. It says 80% in there, but I think it's 70% on the real exam. But anyways, so I thought I'd start off with all that because I can. All right, just as I find my cursor and find it in here, where is that help? There it is. And click on this, we'll be able to see the slide deck. I think, there we go. Haha, look at that. So, this is our session. I am a Microsoft certified trainer. I work for New Horizons. I'm out of Austin, Texas. Actually, all my classes are online, and I usually work from home. Don't tell anybody that. I don't think they're supposed to know. But I'm sitting in my living room talking to students all over the country. Even if you're not part of the Texas group of New Horizons, which is who I work for, I've talked to people in India, in Mexico, in Europe. So we have students from all over the world. The Indian guy had it kind of hard because it was 8 p.m. there when the class started, which wasn't so bad, except that the class ended at like 4 in the morning. So I'm also a Microsoft Most Valuable Professional. That's an honorary title they give out yearly. They actually, MVP has a booth in the expo area if you're interested in finding out more info. All right, so these are kind of the topics. Now, the important thing you need to do is go through the website. Don't trust this. This is a slide that we made, but it may or may not. I'm not going to vouch that it's perfect. Go to the website, microsoft.com/learning, and go to this exam and look at the objectives. If you know those objectives and the sub-objectives, then you're ready for the exam. That's what's going to be on the exam. Okay, those objectives are what Microsoft said the exam should be. And the exam is written to those objectives. The test prep, the measure up test prep, is also written to those objectives. So they should map pretty well. Also, measure up tries to make the exam prep harder than the actual exam. So if you're doing 80, 90% on the test prep, on the practice exams, you should be okay on the real exam. So you can read all that. By the way, Did I put that somewhere? Somewhere in this slide deck, there will be a Dropbox URL. That Dropbox URL has this slide deck. This has been slightly altered from the original, the one that's at the Ignite website. However, I will say this. All the links in this website, and there are tons of resources in this deck, all of those resources have not changed. So they're on the slide deck that you get from the Ignite website, but I made a few changes. So I wanted you guys to have the actual deck I used. And I just put it up in Dropbox like 15 minutes ago. I thought I made a slide with it, and I thought it was like one of the first ones. I'm pretty sure it's the last one, so. All right, so resources first. We have the big old exam prep list. Just in case we don't get through anything, let's talk about resources. Born to Learn study groups. They can be really helpful. By the way, I should mention this. If you think you're close to being able to take the exam, go try a practice exam really quick and sign up. The exams are 50% off here. That's going to save you a bunch of money rather than going home and trying to pass the exam there. Do it here while you're thinking about it. Because if you're like me, you'll wind up putting it off forever. So Born to Learn, mslearn.net, they have study groups, and there's all kinds of stuff up there that you can use to study for the exam. Measure Up, we've talked about. There's a number of ways you can use Measure Up, and some of them mimic the test environment, which, by the way, is online. Some of them are set up for learning. Someone's calling me while I'm presenting. Thank you. Two other tests. For those of you who want more information rather than just this test, want to learn more about mobile development, the 354 and 355 are similar. They're the predecessors of this test. And they can be helpful as well. So there's also an email list for a study group. You cannot share questions. I talked about that already. See, I told you there are about a billion links in here. Virtual Academy is a good way to get started if you're just starting out. Virtual Academy has all kinds of online classes that you can sit through. Channel 9 is great. Look for Universal Windows apps or Universal Windows. I forgot what the P stands for. I always call them Universal Windows apps because that's what Microsoft called them the first few months, and then they changed the name just to confuse me. I'm sure they did it just to confuse me. Test-taking trip tips. This is some of the ways that I can, when I have a hard test that I'm not used to, like I took a Windows test once and I did this kind of stuff. So I created a OneNote. I used one page per study guide section. I outlined the resources. I had code examples because it wasn't something I was totally familiar with, but it was something I had been asked to learn from scratch and then get certified in and then teach. And so I needed to go through this. This is a really good way of learning something new, something you're unfamiliar with. Let's say you want to learn Azure development. Never touched Azure before, need to learn it. This is a really good method of starting out and figuring out what's going on. So the study guide can be really intense. There can be lots of notes before you take the exam. You don't have to share it. In fact, sharing it is counterproductive. It's really just for you to help you study for the exam, to help you figure out what you know and what you don't know and what you need to learn. So no question is trying to trick you. They are not allowed to trick you. That said, it can seem like that because they need to come up with one and only one correct answer. Now, it'll always say best answer, but really there's one correct one. And the reason for that, as I said, is Microsoft doesn't want to get the 1,000 emails that say, hey, there's two answers that were right. I picked that one and I missed the question. So don't overthink it. Eliminate distractors. On most questions, there will be at least one distractor. You can mark any item you want for review and go back to it. I have found for me that tends to be counterproductive because overthinking means when I go back, I overthink. But work what's best for you. Figure out how you work best. So, test results. If you fail the exam, look at the results. The results will tell you how you did on each section. And then, for example, here, we don't know a lot about configuring Hyper-V, so we're going to go back and learn that. Okay, that isn't my results, but mostly because it's server stuff, and I really know nothing about that. I'm a developer. I was C#, then they made it .NET, now they're Visual Studio something. They've changed the MVP classifications 3 times in the last year. Just to confuse me. All right, so it's about 125 questions. This is an early version of this. I can't say exactly how many. If this is wrong, don't hold it against me, but it's somewhere around 125 questions. You should get about 3 hours to take the exam. 700 is passing, which is about 70%. They don't really weight questions. They have talked about doing that. I don't think they do it in this exam, although they don't tell you how much each question is worth. And your results are provided immediately after the exam. If you fail, you can retake it almost immediately. Then you have to wait a while, and you can take it 2 more times. And then you have to wait even longer, and you can take it 2 more times, and then I think you're done. So if you can't pass it in 6 tries, it took me 4 tries to pass the Windows Desktop 7 exam. So, A, it was a hard test, and B, I wasn't used to it. Each exam has a cut score. Each question is generally worth 1 point. There's no partial questions. Here's an important one. No points deducted for wrong answers. So what does that mean for you? Answer every single question, even if you don't know it. You got a 25% chance of being right. Even if you run out of time, go through and, what was it, in Ferris Bueller, right? They just mark C all the way down it. Just do that, okay? Just pick an answer. Why? You got generally there's about 4 answers. You got a 1-4 chance, so 25% of being right. Better than nothing. You get no points for not answering it. You get no points for getting it wrong. It's not like Jeopardy. They don't take points away from you. So go ahead and answer them all. Be aware as you study. Many examples on the web, especially for this stuff, is for Windows 8.1. All the code in the exam should compile. This is helpful for weeding out distractors. I can't really talk. Dang, I wanted to say something, can't. Actually, it's a really old exam, so maybe I can. One exam I had, I remember they didn't have a semicolon at the end of the line. That was years and years ago from an exam they don't even have anymore. So all the code has to compile, remember that. Remember that the exams are not adaptive, so if you find an easy section, zip through it and spend time on the sections that you need to spend time on. They're not adaptive. And the surveys you take at the beginning won't affect the exam. What happens is there is a pool of questions that they pull from. There's generally a bunch of different versions of the exam. So remember that if you retake an exam, it's not going to be the same one probably that you took last time. That would be rare, if not almost impossible, that you would get the same exam that you got before. So, question types. And there's a number of question types. Not all of them are on this exam, but we'll go through the question types really quick. All questions generally have some sort of an anatomy. Often they'll have a business problem, some sort of a goal statement, one or more multiple correct answers. Sometimes, by the way, they say that there's more than one correct answer. Pick all the right ones. Pick all the ways you can do a certain thing. So make sure, read the questions carefully, and make sure if they say there's more than one answer, that, you know, there's two right answers, make sure you pick two. Don't pick three, and don't pick one, because if you miss that, you will get the question wrong. And there often are distractors, sometimes multiple distractors. But the questions aren't intended to trick you, even though sometimes you think they might be. I used to. Build list items. So there's a kind of a question called a build list item. It has a question statement, instruction statement, functionality, answer choices, answer combinations. They kind of look like this, where essentially they're saying, what steps do you need to take to do something? Okay, how do you, you know, what are the steps to get the geolocation, you know, phone? What are the steps you need to take? Drag and drop. So to answer, you drag the appropriate answer to the correct target. They tend to look like this. And essentially, you're doing association. This is associated with that. Active screen. I don't think there's any active screens in this one, where they want you to click on a particular item to say what it is. Hot areas. Matching groups. So, statement analysis. I'm going through this pretty quick because we'd much rather talk about some of the more interesting code things, I would think. Sample statement analysis. There's a bunch of these kind of questions, at least on the sample exams I was playing with this morning, where they'll say, okay, what things do you need to do? Say yes if it applies, no if it doesn't. Sentence corrections, where they're telling you there's a sentence or something wrong, and you need to tell them what it is. Sometimes they'll have no changes needed. Make sure you watch for that. Two-part analysis, which looks like this. Graphical interpretation, where you need to figure out what the window is telling you. There's very few of those in developer tests. Code table analysis items, which look like this. Multi-reasoning. Case studies. All right. So let's talk about what to study. So MSDN docs are probably your best source. Stack Overflow posts are good. They're usually very accurate. Let's talk about some of the major areas in the exam. XAML pages. Okay, there's going to be XAML questions. So you should know about binding. You should know about how to make an adaptive user interface. How can I make the XAML adapt for different resolutions and different screen sizes? What are the commands to do that? That's really important. That's probably, I won't say for sure, probably on the exam. So how do you configure a relative panel layout? You need to know how to select the layout panel based on the UI requirement. You need to know how to configure a grid, how to configure alignment, margins, and padding, and what they do. And oh yeah, here's resources for, I told you there's, like for every other slide, there's gonna be a resource slide like this for you guys to go look up. Implement responsive and adaptive UI behaviors. So they'll ask you questions like this. What is the most responsive or the fastest way to do something? We need to make the UI very responsive. How can you write your XAML so that it is more efficient? Here's the starting XAML. How can you make that XAML better? How can you make it respond better to the user? That's something that'll get asked, probably. All of these are probably, because who knows what questions you're going to get asked. So here's kind of an adaptive trigger. And actually, these kinds of things wind up on the exams. So we're setting up visual states and visual state triggers. I didn't start this. How much time do I have left? How much? 45? I forgot to start the timer, so I know how much time I have left. Cool, there we go. Now I know. All right, so creating and using custom controls with an adaptive UI. So evaluate, yes, sir. You should know Cortana and how to tie into it so that a question that I could very easily foresee them asking is something along the lines of voice recognition. You want to be able to start your app with voice recognition from Cortana. How do you do that? And they'll give you some code samples and say, okay, now what do you do? Or they'll say, this is a code sample to do that. Is it right? Or what would you do next? Or there's another, we went through all the different kinds of app things, but that's something that very easily could get asked.
What about hello?
About who?
Hello, the virtual
recognition. I think that's too new. I don't know. I don't think so, but I don't know. But I know like Cortana would definitely, that definitely fits into the time frame that they wrote this. Hello was right around the time frame. This is about this was in beta 6 months ago. But these exam objectives will tell you whether that's in it or not. I don't remember off the top of my head. Thank you. So things like evaluating when you want to create a custom control, when should you customize the existing controls. How to implement styles and themes, how to create a resource dictionary, how you can apply a style to a custom control. All of that is common XAML that fits into both WPF and mobile development. Here's a whole list of styling resources. optimizing page layout. This is really important in mobile, so there'll probably be a question on it. How to optimize your XAML layout and your XAML markup. Easily see a question on that. Like I said, I can easily see a question on it because I don't know what your individual tests will have, and I can't tell you what questions they really have. But these are things I would definitely pay attention to. Here's an example of where they have a border and then a stack panel and then text blocks. And notice the better version is we set the border in the stack panel. Page navigation and lifecycle events are going to be, I can almost guarantee they're going to be on the exam, at least a few questions. So when should you use the hub? That's something, You know, they'll say, okay, they'll give you a scenario and say, should we how should you implement the UI? What kinds of things? So when do you implement the hub, master details? When do you use tabs and pivot? The navigation patterns. When should you implement a custom navigation pattern? How do you load a page content by using frame.navigate or the nav pane pattern, and when you should use which split view? How to handle the back button is important. There's a whole bunch of resources for that. Managing app activation. So when you launch an app, what happens when it gets activated? What happens when it gets suspended? How do you deal with those things? How do you deal with reactivating a suspended app? All of that can easily be multiple questions on the exam. So also background tasks. Just saw the thing on background tasks. Another important topic to learn if you don't know it. How do you handle app suspension and resumption? So how do you prepare the app for suspension? How do you resume it from suspension or termination? So how are you going to store the state of the application? And remember that the app can be terminated at any time after suspension, and you don't get told that. So when does that happen? How do you store that data? How do you make sure? And then what happens if there's an error? So understand the events and that are raised and the actions that are performed and what you should do in each of those. Another important point that I didn't talk about earlier, I hinted at it. I talked about, hinted at that your office may do things differently. Remember, this is a Microsoft exam, and that Microsoft is using their best practices in creating the exam. That may be different than what you use in your day-to-day work. But they're not going to test what you do in your day-to-day work. They're going to test what Microsoft says are best practices. So just kind of keep that in mind as you go through the answers. So how do you register and handle resume? Here's an example of some of the code you might see. So they might ask things like, they might try and give you like application.current.resuming. Is that really the right method? Is that right, the right event that you want to handle? Make sure you know which event you're supposed to be handling. To register and handle suspension, here's some sample code that's actually correct. But make sure that you know, for example, what the event args are going to be, what's in the event args. They may ask you questions on what's in the event args when you're suspending, or they may give you an example and say, is this right? Data access and data binding. I can almost guarantee there'll be a bunch of questions on this. So make sure you know about Entity Framework and SQLite. SQLite is not a Microsoft product, but it is the most commonly used database in mobile and actually all Universal Windows apps, which is why Entity Framework supports it. Actually, did you guys know that SQLite is actually the data store, internal data store in Windows 10? It is. Microsoft, when they were developing Windows 10, Microsoft Windows team realized there were four different data stores used internally in Windows. And they had already been talking to the SQLite team to see how Windows could be better for SQLite and how they could help SQLite be better on Windows. And then they realized, well, we have four different data stores. We need to decide on one. And they decided on SQLite. That's actually what's used inside Windows 10 on devices like this for a local data store. I did a talk last year on why Microsoft is going open source and why it matters. And that was one of the things we talked about, was that they're actually very open source now, much more open source than they used to be. So know about the binding extension, how you use it. They're going to give you like path equals something. They may or may not include the binding keyword. Make sure you know the correct syntax. This is going to be a place that they're going to try and trip you up on the syntax. Why? Because it's complex. And the XBind expression. So make sure you know about the modes. The mode attribute. And what are valid modes? That's another place I can easily see them trying to differentiate two lines of code. They'll have one that has a mode that's valid and one without. I don't know if they do that, but that's something I can easily see in an exam. MVVM. MVVM is not a Microsoft product. It is a design pattern. It is the most common design pattern used in XAML. It was designed for XAML. So you should know what goes on in that design pattern, how it works, what it is. Know how to implement event binding, so by applying the command patterns. How to implement a dispatcher in order to update the UI thread. Know async and await. If you don't, by this point, that's something you should just learn to write code. Know what you can await and what you can't. I did a talk last year on that too. Async and await best practices. App-to-app communication. So you should know how the share contract works in order to share content with another application. How to implement drag and drop. Drag and drop is pretty simple on its face, but it gets a little more complex as you implement it. The basics are pretty simple. Implementation can be a little more complex, and I can easily see that be a place that you might get tripped up. It's like, yeah, I have to mark something as draggable. I have to fill, you know, handle the drag start event. What do I do? How can, you know, how do you mark an element to be droppable? So as a recipient, as a target, those kinds of things. What do you do in the event handlers? What events are there? Which ones do you have to handle? How do you mark it in XAML? Those are all important to know. JSON, most commonly used format now. Nobody uses XML anymore. Well, XAML is XML. But other than that, nobody uses it to transmit data. So JSON, data serialization. Also cloud implementation. Think about this. Microsoft is a huge bet on the cloud. So you need to know how to implement stuff and how to interact with the cloud. How do you manage storage? So you should know about storage files, storage folders, storage items, file pickers, the roaming folders. How do you access them? What are the steps you use to access them? Here is an example of some code for using the, I mean, so you want to know like windows.storage.pickers.pickerViewMode. You want to know those kinds of things. That's, remember I said they sometimes get really picky? Well, that's a spot that I could see them getting really picky. They might give you the wrong namespace, for example, as one of the choices. So if you know the namespace, it makes it easy. If you don't know the namespace, it can be tricky. Know that, for example, Dealing with files is asynchronous. Know what's asynchronous in mobile development. Know what methods are asynchronous, which ones you should be awaiting. It's another place I can see them getting, giving you or confusing you. Feature detection, that's another one that's gonna come up probably. So how do I know if the mobile device has geolocation? They pretty much all do, but you might wanna check before you try and do something. And they're gonna ask questions. How do you find out whether it supports a particular feature or not? So implementing type detection. So dynamically detecting features is important. The application model.calls.calls phone contract, device form. Those are all things you should know before you go into the exam. How do you implement support for a microphone, a webcam, location? I just talked about that. Enterprise authentication. Authentication will come up, I can almost guarantee it, in the exam. And they'll talk about one or more different authentication mechanisms. How do you use a live ID? When you use a live ID or a Microsoft account, what does it give you access to? Those are things that you should be aware of and understand. The command bars, the app bar buttons, context menus, flyouts, tooltips. They'll talk about, they might talk about tooltips, where they appear on the screen. How can I modify where they appear on the screen? Because there's ways to modify where they appear. So how do you do that? And they'll say, they won't probably ask you to write the code to make it do that. What they'll say is, where does the tooltip show up? Based on this code, where do you see the tooltip showing up? Or they might say, how do you make the tooltip do what you want? Remember, tooltips can have images, they can have all kinds of stuff in them. So you want to be aware of that as well. Input devices, so you need to think about, wow, they brought a whole bottle. I think we just wanted a little bottle. They brought like a huge bottle of water. I could not drink that much water. All I wanted was one of these little ones. And they brought like that, they brought like a 5-gallon bottle of water. I haven't even touched that one yet. All right, so other things to think about, to know. Input, how do you support mouse and keyboard input? And touch. And touch is gonna be a big one here. Most of your mobile devices have touch, and touch is a very different paradigm than mouse, because your finger is a lot bigger than the mouse cursor. So how do you space things for that? How can I change orientation? How do I deal with orientation changes? That's another one that you need to know. Speech and voice commands. Someone asked about Cortana. You do need to know about Cortana integration. How do you support the personal assistant launch? How can you support voice commands? So someone, I want to be able to start my application when someone talks to Cortana. How do you implement that? What are the steps to do that? Those are the kinds of questions you're going to get asked. Here's all the speech resources. So this is way more than you probably need for the exam. The exam itself will cover, I only have 20 more slides left. The exam itself will not cover 100% of this, and this is way more resources than you probably need to finish the exam. But as someone was saying earlier, I want to learn about this. I don't just want to be taking the exam. So alternative forms of input. So GPS, location services, camera, ink. Ink might very well come up on the exam. That's another good one that I can see Microsoft asking about. How do you deal with ink? What's the process? How does ink work? So understand the key classes and the sequencing in geolocation and things like ink. Geolocator. So remember that there's get position async, and then there's another option where you get multiple, I forgot the name of it, where you get multiple locations rather than just one off, right? You can ask for a single location. You can ask for location over a period. Make sure you understand the difference between those. And by the way, what information do you get from geolocation? What's in the event arguments? Because you're going to handle an event when that comes back. So here, how do we ask the end user? Because remember, the end user can tell us not. And by the way, then what do you do if they don't give you geolocation access? So here's an example of valid code to register for changes in geolocation so that I can be notified when you move. That's more water than I could ever drink, too. He has a whole case of bottled water, but at least they're small. So here you can see if it was allowed, if it was denied, if it's unspecified, and you should know all three of those because they'll probably, I could see them asking something about, well, what happens if it's accepted or not or whatever. How can you handle location changes? What are in the event arcs? How can you notify users or do something else? Identity management and authentication. Like I said, I can pretty much guarantee there'll be some questions on this. So how do you do OAuth, Azure Active Directory authentication? Windows ID, I have what, about 25, 24 minutes, 20 minutes, somewhere in there? Okay. We may get done a little early. I'm up to 90. I'm going pretty quickly. Am I going too fast for you guys? Okay. Credential Locker, that's something important you need to know too. What is in Credential Locker? How do you access it? What does it provide your application? Does it provide the username? Does it provide the, you know, what does it provide? Those are all important to know. So both understand how to use features and understand the steps to provision the features. So those are both important concepts. They're two things that are going on simultaneously. I might ask a question, what steps do you do to access, for example, Credential Locker? Or they may ask another question, and they could ask both. Another question they could ask is, what information do you get? And then a third question is, how do you provision it? So make sure that you go through and understand how that works. What are the key classes? So the password vault, which gets a reference to the credential locker, and then the password credential, which has the username and password, which is passed to the locker, the vault, in order to retrieve information. So there's a sample of how you can add something to the... Know the arguments and the order of the arguments. That sometimes comes up. I know that sounds really picky, but that will often be a way that they differentiate a couple of answers. Now, you could probably, even if you didn't know the order, you could throw out the two that you knew weren't right, and then just pick whichever one you think is, you think the order of the arguments is. That's always where they get me. I always get messed up on order of arguments because I don't remember them. That's what IntelliSense is for. to request all the credentials. How do I request the credentials? And then what's in them? How can I loop through those credentials and find what I want? So what are the properties? They do Windows Hello. I wasn't sure whether they got there or not. But two-factor authentication, that's important too. How do we do two-factor authentication? So how do I set it up so I can text you a code? Right, we've all had that happen, especially with a Microsoft account where it's like, you're checking in from a new place. We need a code. So how do you set that off? How do you prepare for that? Background tasks and notifications. Yeah, a lot of apps don't use Toast. A lot of apps don't, more apps use background tasks than Toast. I almost never use Toast in my applications because I hate them. But that'll probably be a question, is how do you set up Toast? So how do you develop class libraries? How can you integrate Windows runtime components into your application? How do you implement Tile and Toast notifications? I talked about this. What happens when you click on it, and how can you ensure that when someone clicks on a Toast, it goes to where you want? How do you implement that functionality? How do you register and run background tasks? So how do you create a background task project? You reference it from within yours and implement triggers and conditions in it. Those will come up on that exam. How do you monitor the background task progress and completion? How can you manage the task lifecycle? How can you share data? Platform, that's what the P stands for. How do you implement or consume a universal Windows platform app service? How do you create them? How do you consume them? How do you specify an app service extension? Do you implement the app service as a background task? Deploy the app service provider and call it. So why didn't it show up on here? I thought I put it on this one. Give me a moment. See, I got done too fast. Let me get you the Dropbox for the slide deck. Because there are a ton of really good resources in there. And I know I went through that pretty fast, but I'm trying to tell you as many things that are going to be on the test, could be on the test. I can't really talk about what exactly is on it. I came as close as I think I can get away with. All right, this is that one. Okay. Now I can go back here. Really? All right, let's do that then. Come on. Oh, there it was. I know I got done. Copy and paste, always an adventure. Right? There we go. That is the URL for that slide deck that I just did. And that all the resources and everything else is in there. Actually, this is about where I wanted to be because I wanted 15 minutes left for questions. So, yes, sir. Let's do this. Let's go through actually what is on the exam. There we go. I was going to do that, and then I said, no, I'll save time. So, the way you find out what's on an exam is you go to Microsoft.com/learning. Thank you. And then you go to certifications, and we want developer. Now, I should mention one other thing before you guys leave. If you haven't checked online recently or been by the booth downstairs, be aware that the certification paths are changing. They announced it Monday during the keynote, and if you're like me and slept in on Monday, you didn't see that keynote. There was a blog post on Monday about it. If you go by the Microsoft Learning booth in the expo area, they have a full chart of exactly how all the exam paths are changing. And what they're doing is they're simplifying it and making it easier to get a full certification like an MCSD, and so they're changing the path in order to make that easier. I don't know, do you know where it is online?
Board Alert has that bracket right now. It's not on the MSL site yet.
Okay, so it's Born to, let me, I'll show that first and then we'll go back to the other one. It's Born to Learn. To learn dot, what is it? Dot MS. I should have mentioned that up front, shouldn't I have? Microsoft Streamlines Technical Certifications. Here is the new, thank you. Here's the new set. So there's a mobility. There's a cloud platform. And this is the way it's changing. So if you'll note, there's two tests to get an MCSA and an elective to get an MCSE. So that's a very nice change. Makes it much easier to get the higher level certifications. And they have this full list downstairs in the expo area. So if you go to, I know that because I've spent all day yesterday showing people this. Actually, nobody asked me about mobility and only a few people asked me about productivity. But, and there's, I think there's a developer one. Is there a developer one that's not on it or did that change at all? Do you know? Just the app builder, okay. So, and it lists what actual exams fall into all of these. Let's see.
Microsoft.com/learning will give some more specifics there. Right now it's kind of in this intermediate period where it has some certification of the new ones. If you go to MCSD app builder on this website, it'll actually show you the full path.
Okay, cool. So there you go. All right, so this is exam 357. Exam list. It says beta still, but it's not in beta anymore. I checked. I asked if it was in beta. So here's what's on the exam. So develop a XAML page. It's kind of small, isn't it? Develop a XAML, Developers, I don't have a mouse. This isn't touch. Is there? Yeah, there is. Oh, I'm not good at this. Anyways, so I'll read it to you or go through it. Anyways, so how do you construct a page layout? So they want to know about the relative layout, the XAML layout panel based on your UI requirements. We talked about that. How to configure a grid with appropriate column and row properties. How do you implement a responsive and adaptive UI? And they will ask you questions like, how do you make something more responsive? Here's some XAML. How can I improve it? How can I make it so that it is more responsive? Create and use custom controls. Optimize page layout. We talked about that. That's only 10 to 15% of the exam. Another 10 to 15% is the navigation structure. How do you implement an appropriate navigation structure? So which controls do you use? How do you use them? How do you manage app activation, app suspension and resumption? Data access and data binding is a full 20 to 25%. So data access by using Entity Framework and SQLite, binding extension, the XBind extension, MVVM, app-to-app communication. Oh, I forgot to talk about REST services, which are on the list. So if you don't know about REST services, everybody know what? Implementing JSON and data serialization, access cloud data with web API using HTTP clients, so it's consuming them, not creating them. Because you're probably not going, I mean, on a mobile app, you're not going to be, there's no reason to test for something you're not going to do. And how many web applications are actually a REST service? You're going to consume one, you're not going to, right? You're going to consume one in a web application, you're not sending data out. So you wouldn't want to, there's no need to know how to create a service. That wouldn't be part of the exam because it's not anything anybody does. You might develop the service, yeah, but that would be the server-side code. So that would be something that that would be part of a different exam. We're just focusing on the mobile part here, just the client part. So MVVM, REST, yeah, file access. And then how do I access local, temporary, how do I do roaming? Feature detection is only 10 to 15%. So API detection with adaptive code, type detection with adaptive code, microphone implementation. Custom user interactions is only 10 to 15%, but it includes things like how do you use the command bars, the flyouts, the dialogues. So that's another one that they'll probably try and get you on. It's like, we want to make sure that the end user gives you information before you move on. What do you use? Dialog box, but I could see something like that being on the exam. So that's probably be an easy one, but they can't all be really hard. Support for traditional touch and input devices, speech I talked about. Next on the list, authentication and identity management, it's only 10 to 15%. I spent a little bit more time on that because that's something that I have trouble with personally. So the stuff that I think is hard, I spent more time on. And finally, notifications and reusable background tasks, reusable components. This is another big part because it's 20 to 25%. And it covers class libraries, runtime components, Toast and tiles. How do you update a tile? That's something that I don't want to say you don't need to know all the formats, but you should at least be aware that there are multiple formats for that. how to register a background task, implement and management in Universal Windows Platform App Service. So that is the topics that are on the exam. That's what Microsoft says they will put on the exam. And each of these, so if you take 120 questions and you give or take, and you figure 25% of them or 20% of them, how many questions is that? So that's the easy way to kind of get an idea of what to spend time studying on. Other questions? So did that answer the question? Okay. Microsoft.com/learning. And then I went to, let's go back a couple. Then I went to, come on, certification or find an exam. And I just looked up this exam number, 357. Or you could just do a Bing search at 70-357 and it should be one of the first few that come up. But I started at microsoft.com/learning, find an exam. There's the exam list, and I went down the list and found 357. You're welcome. There's 5 minutes left if anybody has a question. Otherwise, there are lots of parties tonight. I do have 3 t-shirts for... All right, so let's see who is what size. That's how we're going to determine who gets which t-shirt, because I have 3 of them to give away. And you lucky people who hung out towards the end, you get them. All right, this is an extra large. How many people are extra large? Nobody? All right. Wow. I might have a 2XL too. This is another XL. This is 2XL. See, I don't have anything to fit any of you. You got it. Anybody else? I'm not going to try and throw it that far. That's a long way to go. Anybody else for a t-shirt? While we're here, anybody else got a question? Well, thank you very much for attending. Hopefully you got something out of it. I think I was supposed to say something about evals too, right?
Yes, there's a course evaluation in your MyIgnite section if you reserve this class.
And I think even if you didn't reserve it, I think you can still eval them. Okay, I haven't done that yet. This is my first talk. I was a little nervous when I started. It's my first talk here. So hopefully you guys got something out of it. Thank you very much for hanging out with me this afternoon. Like I said, the best bet that I can tell you on test prep is go across the hall or use that URL. Let me put that URL up again. By the way, that text... let's see if I can find it. There it is. Help. There's too many screens here. There we go. So remember that MSL Study Hall, AzureWebsites.net, that'll let you access all the measure up tests. And there's more than just this one. And you can access it at least from anywhere inside the building. I think so. I didn't even know we were allowed to give that out. I had to actually call David and ask him.
And you just log in with the same login.
It says what exactly how to log in when you get to that landing page. That's a landing page that lists all the exams, and then it'll forward you to Measure Up, and it will tell you exactly how to get on it. There's a username and password you need to use when you get to Measure Up. And it's on the landing page. And there's a button that says, get started, use this name and this password, and you're good to go. All right, then. Thanks you all very much. Have a great afternoon. Enjoy your evening.